Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to This Moment, your transatlantic bridge connecting Stockholm, Sweden to Harlem, USA. But not only that, at times and whenever given the chance, we like to connect to our peoples across the globe, to connect with the diaspora, to talk about the things that we love most: food, equal rights, the struggle for justice, and hip hop culture. So it is a great honor that today on the show, we have none other than award-winning Ugandan rapper, record producer, hip-hop pioneer, Navio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Navio, welcome to the show, brother.
Ooh-a-la, hey.
What's up?
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm 1,000. Despite the circumstances, I'm good. Always good.
So tell me, where are you right now?
Yeah, right now I'm in Bukasa, in Kampala, and that's in Uganda, East Africa. So in Uganda, UG as they call it.
What's the vibe in Kampala today, now, October, going on October 2021?
The vibe is pretty chilled compared to like a year ago. Or I can say months ago. We just had elections out here. It's been pretty rough, you know. I'd say a year ago, yeah, it was completely a madhouse, you know. We had elections at the same time as COVID hit. And it was a pretty big and a pretty heavily contested election for the first time. You know, you had an artist, a guy that I grew up with called Bobby White, and he's going up against the president who's been beloved out here for like 30 years, you know. So it was a tough one, man. And it hit it exactly the same time as, you know, the first wave was what they call the first wave, you know, was hitting out here. So we kind of came out of that. And now, you know, we're a party state, you know, like partying, having a good time. That's what UG is all about. So I think now you've kind of seen people get over a lot of the issues that happened, kind of more like forgive, not forget, you know, but people are kind of trying to go back to normal life.
There's so much in that, Navio, that I want to unpack. I mean, but first of all, and maybe first and foremost, what is the pandemic ebbing out in UG right now, or is it still going strong? What are those stats, and how is that affecting life like today?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because when I talk to my friends in the States, or, you know, I have guys in South America, you know, and I'm like, yeah, man, we had like 30 people, you know, die today, you know. For them, they like almost laugh at me, you know, I mean, it's almost laughable. Those are the stats, you know, for the first wave. It was like maybe 30 people dying at times, 30 people getting infected, you know. It was pretty low, you know, for the first wave. And that lasted like a whole, you know, maybe 3 months. So people hadn't really seen the effects. People hadn't seen other people get sick. There was no one in people's circles getting sick. And so people were like, man, this is just,
Did they believe it, or was it
that's an issue. A lot of people believed it. A lot of people were like, ah, this is just, you know, vaccinations, or they're just trying to keep us off the street, you know, so that they can control this election. You know, that was the other feeling that people had. But I think when the second wave hit, you know, it really, everyone was kind of affected. You know, there was, it was, if it was not a friend, it was a friend of a friend, you know, that had contracted it. Yeah, I actually got it as well, you know, of course.
Word.
Yeah, right after the Hip Hop Awards, you know. I won a couple of awards. There was a one too many high fives, you know what I mean? Yeah, congratulations,
you won some
bro.
Some awards, and then you caught some
some
prizes, and you caught some virus, but you pulled through it, I hope.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I was asymptomatic, basically.
Okay.
You know, which is, yeah, kind of weird.
That's a blessing, man.
Yeah, I grew up asthmatic, so I was like, okay, it's a wrap for me, you know what I mean? But absolutely no effect, man. I was working out throughout the whole thing, and luckily I found out right at the beginning, so I was able to stay away from, like, you know, my loved ones, my family. And it was cool.
What did the vaccination rollouts look like, you know, from a Ugandan perspective?
Are
you vaccinated? Is it like readily available for you know, for people?
Nah, barely available. Really? I think there's maybe 2 million people who've been vaccinated, and we're like 40 million. So there's still, yeah,
wow.
There's still a lot.
So
yeah,
like about 5%. Yeah, that's low, man.
Yeah,
but
super
low. You know, so I'm Navio, I'm sitting in Stockholm in Sweden. I don't know if you've been ever.
Yes.
Massive Ugandan community in Sweden.
Yes.
Oh, you've been here.
Yes.
Yeah, you have. All right.
Yeah, a few times.
Well, okay, beautiful. That makes me very happy that there's, you know, bridges between our countries. I have a lot of Ugandan friends. So there's a small but powerful, I would say, Ugandan community in Sweden.
Yes.
Several talented artists, you know, that have Ugandan roots, but seen from a Swedish perspective, right? And looking at the pandemic, I mean, obviously, the election in January in UG was global news, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's crazy.
We were put in that. But as far as, you know, and we'll hear on the news every now and then, I'll be listening to BBC and they talk about, you know, the low vaccination rates in sub-Saharan Africa or in continental Africa, more or less.
Yeah.
And it's something that flashes past, I think, the minds, if I could speak in general terms, of people here, because the reality of being in a place where vaccines aren't available to that point just kind of underlines this ongoing inequality and ongoing kind of oppression of continental Africa that's, you know, got a few hundred years in the making. That's why it's interesting to talk to you who you know, you're living your life there with your family and trying to get by, and yet and still.
Yeah, and actually, my wife is half Swedish as well. So,
oh wow! All right, yo,
you know,
we basically,
you know, we family, man.
Right. Nice.
You know, what I mean, I get down, Julia Halon. You know, is why I like to come out there. You know what I mean? Get me some gravad lax, you know, that's why I like
okay. Well, we got to get you over here for some shows once things calm down a bit.
By the way, yeah, it's about time, man. I need to, and you're a legend out there, man. So it's even a blessing, man. I just wanted to slide that in quickly, get that out
Thank
the way,
you, brother.
You know,
Thank you, brother.
Get over my nerves.
Okay.
So yeah, man, it's
so
good to be on the podcast.
It's two legends in conversation here. So let's rewind a bit, Navio. Tell me a bit about and tell the listeners about your background. Like what's your story, basically?
Yeah, so I was born in Nairobi during the Civil War in Uganda. So you had, of course, the legendary Idi Amin come into power around about the same time that I was born. And you had Milton Obote as well, who's a dictator before him. Well, wasn't a dictator at that point in many people's minds, but he was overthrown by Idi Amin. And you end up having a situation that's, you know, there's this civil war in the streets. So my dad was actually an active revolutionary during all of this. So it ended up being that we had to run out of the country. He had a vendetta for my dad personally. So we ended up heading out of the country, and we go to Nairobi as a family, and that's where I am born. in exile. And and then from there, we actually shift around. So to Zambia, between Zambia, actually Kenya and a few other places, a few other countries that would take us in. So we're kind of like running around different countries in Africa in exile. And come
As you're
back.
growing up, kind of. So,
Yes, as I'm growing up. So we come back. My brother and sister have started school in Kenya. So I continue going to school in Kenya. I'm out there for like another 10 years, all the
Wow.
way up until
Okay.
high
So,
school.
okay.
But by then, by 86, 87, the war's done. So from that point onwards, I stay in Kenya for school, but my family relocates back to Uganda, safe and sound. So in school, I hang with dudes. I'm more interested in sports, but all of my boys are just crazy about hip hop, so I can't
And
get away from
what are some of the
the
tunes? What are some of the artists that
Oh,
your
man.
boys and that some of your early like hip hop memories of
Yeah.
hearing and getting in touch
Yeah.
with the culture?
I'll say getting in touch with it was like also my brother. My brother was heavy into it, but he kind of brought that. I kind of entered with the whole West Side Connection era. West Side Connection, Poverty's Paradise, Naughty by Nature, Fush Nickens. I kind of got a whole colorful palette, of hip hop when it was like at its most raw and whatnot. And so by the time I was trying it out in school, it was like when Tupac and Biggie were going at it, and it was really my friends who were at the core of it. I was like, man, sports. So I was playing rugby, I was playing hockey, I was doing swimming, cross country, I was on the athletics team. Like I was
Wait a
just
minute, wait a minute.
on
You
my
were playing
sporting.
hockey in UG.
Yeah, not ice hockey.
Not ice hockey. Okay.
No,
Yeah,
no,
because I
no.
was about to say, like, they really have to create some cold. You'd be
I'm
playing that on
telling
high altitude or something to get
get
that
them. Yeah,
ice. Because
we could maybe
here in
do a
Sweden,
half
not
court.
difficult, but
Be really difficult. We'd have to do like half court. Yeah, just swim instead. It would be easier. But yeah, so we start rapping at the end of high school, come back with my friends over here now. The family's kind of going through, I gotta get off school for a couple of years. Let me put it like that. So as I'm out of school at the end of high school, my boys keep on coming back, and a couple of them are based here as well now. So they're going to day school here. And so in 2000, 2001, we start. In 2000, 2001, we start Clear Cut, call ourselves Clear Cut.
Exactly.
And
Pioneering Ugandan hip hop
yes,
group.
yeah. And by this stage, we're like 14 years, 15 years old.
Wow, okay,
And
you were that young when you started that. All right. All
And
right.
literally a year after that, we've been hitting all the battles, hitting all the competitions, just killing it on the street.
So by then, hip hop culture was that kind of vibrant in Kampala, in Uganda, that
But it
it's
was
what
all
was what the
international.
kids were listening to.
But it was all international. So, we'd literally take our record to the station and they'd be like, oh, we play hip hop, but we just don't play Ugandan hip hop. That was like a major thing for us. Like my first proper heartbreak was being told that, I was like my own turf. So we always had a thing and they'd always complain, oh, the quality, it's just too raw, it's too this and too that. So that's the first time I really started to suss out the game and analyze, quality and what it means and getting my bars up and making sure that I'm on international level. I never wanted to be in a playing field where I didn't know what I was doing. And so, yeah, man, it took a year. We came up with some quality records, get nominated, these are 15, 16 year olds. We get nominated for the KORA Awards, and that's the biggest awards show in Africa at that point.
Wow. And it's is it an award show held in Uganda or in another country?
No, in South Africa. So
Wow.
they
Okay.
yeah they fly
So
in
it's a
legends from all over.
Pan-African musical award. That's huge,
Yes.
man.
It's all, you're on the plane with Oliver Mutukudzi, you're eating breakfast with, Koffi Olomide, you're,
Whoa,
looking this side
okay.
that, there's Lucky Dube.
Wow.
It's like it was just next level
Massive.
for, 14, 15 year old kids, man.
And
So
would you say that at the time, like in Uganda, we're talking early 2000s, that kids are influenced by, and radio is playing equal parts kind of American or Western music and kind of Pan-African or continental African music, like some of the artists you're mentioning, Lucky Dube from South Africa, Koffi Olomide from, I think he's from Congo or
yes, Kofi Congo, Dara.
He's from Congo. So the kids, I mean, people know about the Afro, they're not just listening to American and British music at this point.
No, thank God.
That makes me very happy to hear.
Congolese music was like running Africa by then. So they were the big boys to watch, you know, Congolese music. And then it kind of turned to South African as well, you know, with the Brenda Fassies and Yvonne Chaka Chaka. They had it for a long time. And then it kind of moved to UG. We had it for a few summers, and then when it hasn't been back since it went to Nigeria, it hasn't been back. So
they didn't give the crown back. Not yet.
We still sticking in there, man. I'm rooting for Burundi and the rest, you know.
I'm still to hear any rappers from Burundi, but ears are wide open.
They got bars and Rwanda. They're really good.
Wow. All right.
Yeah,
because traveling in South Africa, while like some of the fiercest MCs I heard were cats from Zimbabwe.
They
had some really dope MCs from Zimbabwe.
I think they have a lot of it's kind of like what the Northwest is for South Africa, you know. I wouldn't say there's less to do, but kids can really work on the craft, you know. They can really work on their skills. So a place like Zimbabwe is kind of like that, you know. So the guys you get coming out of there are really dope. Same as, you know, Northwest artists in South Africa. They have time to really get it right, I think.
Being in UG, which is an Anglophone country, English-speaking country, do you also listen to some of the, like, well, you mentioned DRC, and of course they're singing, if anything, they're singing in French, otherwise a local language or their own languages. But were you listening to, like, Côte d'Ivoire and, like, Senegal, you know, which had a Senegal strong hip hop scene.
Yeah. I mean, it's by like 2004, 2005, we had started exploring Africa like hard. So we're one of the few groups that you could catch out all the way in the West, like Burkina Faso, Accra, Benin, you know, Nigeria, of course. We were doing that. Then, of course, you had the Botswana, you know. Find yourself in Goma, in Congo. We traveled and maybe hit like over 15 countries, you know, by plane, bus, whatever it took, really, at that point to kind of get our name out there. So we're one of the blessed few to be able to hear artists from all over and what they were up to. I mean, thank God for the internet. But, you know, there was some charm to actually going there. You know, actually going there personally and having to like get your record out. It was a beautiful thing.
Was it mainly CDs then, I guess? It's still kind of early days of internet.
Definitely. I mean, all the way up until recently, that's been an issue on our side, right? So you have artists who are huge, and anywhere else in the world, they'd have 10 million followers, you know, online, but they'll have like a couple thousand, you know, and it's been a real problem, and the expense
because
of internet.
Still CDs are still like used today, like
when you drop your
latest album, Strength in Numbers, did you release that on CD as well?
Yes, I did. And I think I caught the wave just as like change is kind of coming, you know. At first people were like, no, just do it, you know, do it online and keep it there. But I was like, you have so many little distributors who are not, they're kind of like illegal distributors over here, and people give them the music and they put it on these CDs, and people come by and buy the CDs, and that's where they go for to get their movies and stuff like that. You know, this still seems to be something that's working. So I was like, you know, let's just take a risk, make some CDs, and see what happens. And thank God it paid off, you know, the gamble. We also teamed up with, you know, the biggest Boda Boda. You know, the Boda Bodas are the little bikes over here.
Okay.
And they're like a delivery service. So we teamed up with them in lockdown because they were able to move. And so people were able to order their CDs and they got straight delivered to their house and stuff. So we managed to get in there, I think, right before the change really happens and everything switches online. So it's a blessing and a curse. But yeah, man, I'm glad to get rid of those CDs, to say the truth. They're bulky.
And then, so clear cut, y'all were, you know, y'all made massive waves in your home country in Uganda. And by hearing you, I mean, really went Pan-African. The term Uga Flow comes from, you know, clear cut, really establishing a Ugandan hip hop identity. And you released a couple of albums, and then how, I mean, today I know you're a solo artist. So how was that journey?
Yeah, it was really just about going back to school, because remember I had taken 2 years out, which became three.
Right.
And our parents were like seeing the escalation, you know, us guys just blowing up overnight. You know, you go from like these little talent shows we're going to, and then it turns into like, you know, 5,000 people, then 10,000 people at a show, and we're little kids. And we're also getting banked for that, you know. Our parents kind of, you know, had a meeting and were like, yo, you guys need to go back, finish school, and then you can do what you want. So all of us ended up splitting up.
Were they ever
again.
Worried that you guys were like, you know, staying up late, maybe doing things that, you know, you weren't supposed to be doing? Or
We were pretty well behaved, man, surprisingly, because there was so much action in Uganda. Like, even, for example, MTV came to launch here. A lot of the big networks came to launch in Uganda at that point in time because it was by far the most vibrant. So we were doing like upwards of like 6-7 shows a weekend, and that hasn't changed until COVID, you know. So it was a lot of action. It was too much happening for us to get up to a lot, you know. And at that age, really, you know, all you're looking for is just rap, sports, go home, junk food. You know, you're not really in tune with what's happening, you know, as far as the club scene and everything. So plus we had to move with security, and that really helped, you know.
Okay,
they'd be like, get in the car,
chaperones.
It's 5 a.m
so that
get
was
in the car.
So that was still the vibe that you guys had to move with security. Was that just because of that you were so young, or is that like?
No, I mean, it just turned into that all of a sudden. I mean, the first couple of years was okay, but then, you know, we ended up getting in small altercations here and there. You know, there's people who want to grab you and hold you and not let you go, or check you about something you said in a rap. And you know, the fans here get really involved in your music, and you know, hip hop. If someone can really get to know you from what you say, and they can honestly
they
not
also
like
let you know what they think.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was hard for us, especially being kids. And I guess, like you say, being pioneers, no one could explain that to us. Like, people are going to react to you online like this, or people are going to come up to you. And, you know, there are people in my group who are, you know, who get busy, like they really don't mind an altercation and face to face. They're like, okay. So we kind of had to train ourselves to just take the criticism, you know, and let it go, you know, just be like, hey, this is the music industry and this is what we need to expect. But we had to learn it by going through it. You know, there was no one there to kind of teach us and tell us about it.
But how do you,
so
at
yeah,
that
we all
point,
split up
in the middle of a very successful, you know, career as an artist, and how do you decide to then say, no, I'm going to go back to school, take a hiatus?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, mostly parental influence. And also I was tired, man. I won't lie, I was tired. You know, I was still trying to play ball and, you know, all the other stuff. And I wanted to go back to school because even though I was 2 years young for my class, that had kind of caught up with me now. You know, I was now actually at the age where I needed to be. I was always young for school. You know, I started boarding school when I was like 5 years old. But now I was like, 3 years later, I'm actually with these dudes, you know. I was kind of in a hurry to go back because I also didn't want to fall too behind. And I was also really tired, man. You know, 6-7 shows a week, party after party. I mean, for 3 years, it was like, okay, you know, what else can we do right now? Let me go educate myself, get this out the way. I know it's really important to my father and my family, you know. So I was kind of happy in a way to get back to school. At the same point in time, I didn't think music was going to change and move and become so different. And getting back into the industry was definitely difficult, you know. Yeah. But I went through, I'd come back, try and release a song, roll out. Then I'd see the guy I've collaborated with, you know, driving around in Benzes and, you know, they've got shows every weekend. So it was kind of hard, man. Sometimes, you know, I'll be watching MTV in school and my video will pop up. You know, and like I'm sitting down, like revising for exams, and I'm, you know, I felt like I missed out a little bit, you know, but it was cool.
Five solo albums in now. Sorry, go.
I was saying that. Yeah, so we all split up for school, and that's how I think we started, you know, our solo journeys. You know, I was doing a lot of conscious music and battles in South Africa. It was just like, you know, they had these battles for money and you'd find the most raw guys, you know, guys from Soweto. And that really upped my game because I came into the industry on some conscious tip. And then it kind of went a little bit commercial with Clear Cut. And so by the time I went back to South Africa, that was my first like real lesson in street hip hop and the battle element. And I won't say the darker side of hip hop. I'll just say like bars, you know, where
you either got it or perfect. You don't, you know,
exactly.
Catchy chorus is going to save you when you're, you know, face to face with somebody who's got fire bars.
Yes, we know exactly. That, you know? So, I thank South Africa for that kind of training. So by the time I came back, I felt safe anywhere. As far as like music, I could get on a song, collaborate with a, you know, singer. You know, I could do the folk music because my background is from that. My grandparents play that at weddings, you know, 8 hours straight. The solo act Navio was born, you know, 2009.
So you spent a couple of years in South Africa getting your education.
Six.
And then you come back to Uganda. 6 years, man. And where you can't wholeheartedly, you know, I guess, dedicate yourself to being a recording artist, but you sharpen your sword and then you re-enter your home country with that education. Parents are happy with your bars really on point. And that's when you kind of start, you release your first solo album.
Yeah, carte blanche. Okay. I'd paid the piper, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I felt that freedom. There was no weight on my shoulders. I was like, oh, let's do it. It was a good feeling as well. Yeah.
And so how was it? I mean, re-entering, there must be like, you know, I just released my first album a couple of weeks ago, my first album in 7 years, which is the longest kind of, you know, hiatus I've had from music in my life. You know, you notice when, and I always keep my ear, I'm listening to what's going on, but at the same time, there's all these young cats popping up doing things differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not easy, you know, and you find yourself being like, no. This is the way to do it, you know? But you always have to progress. So was it difficult getting back into like being a recording artist and doing shows again once you started going solo?
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, the whole industry had changed because now, especially my group, we were one of the first group. Well, we were the first group to do like a proper music video for a track and have a release date and do that. And then we're the first group to have, you know, an album, you know, 15, 16 songs. So all those days, 20, 21 songs, you know, to have an album launch concert. You know, we were the first groups to do that. And then we left. So when I came back in, I'm like, oh, everyone's doing this now. Now what we've done has become standard, you know. So when I came back in and I started doing music again, I'm like, okay, now we got to take it a notch higher. So now in the concerts, you know, I basically record a whole bunch of music like really fast, you know, like because I'd been in school this whole time, you know. I was, you know, as soon as they gave me a microphone, so it's like 3 weeks, album done, boom. And then I did a concert, and in the concert, you know, I'm it's like I'm on stage, I'm like changing seven times, you know, and I've got the live band. Guys are like, what, you're a rapper? Right. Just do the DJ. I've got a live band, and I'm, you know, we've got the LED screens. I didn't even know what they were. I was like, can we just put it on stage behind me? They're like, no, people want to watch it. You know, there was like a whole lot of rules and stuff, you know, laws that we were breaking. And yeah, because I felt like I had to take it up. I'm like, oh, everyone's caught up. You know, what am I going to do now to kind of push us further? So that had to happen. And yeah, since then, the industry is now competitive. I think, you know, people, you know, are now trying not necessarily outdo each other, but, you know, try and now look internationally, see what people are doing and just up their game, which is really cool.
The overall music scene, but specifically the hip hop scene in Uganda and in Kampala today.
Yeah.
What would you say is the temperature? I mean, obviously affected by you know, the pandemic, whatever standstill that has meant. But
yeah, I'd say that hip hop itself was really big when we had come out, and then it kind of died down. Raga, reggae, all that took over almost completely. And we've kind of come back in the industry, and you have a lot of people doing the rap and then they now blending it with a lot of more commercial elements, especially on the raga side, because that's what pops off over here. But I'd say that of the top 20 acts right now, like 7 or 8 of them are rappers, you know, and that was never the case before. You know, a few years ago, it was like, oh, we, you know, be like, oh, this guy is number 25. You know, you find another rapper on the list of the top 100. You're like, oh, you know, but now like in the top 10, in the top 20, we're all there. You know, there's other rappers that you see and recognize, and what they're doing at shows with crowds is crazy. So I think that COVID has just slowed that progress down a little bit. I think by now people will be realizing that hip hop is actually the wave, you know, the next wave. And,
hip hop also became a little more danceable. I'm not saying that it, you know, softened in that way, but you know, when you hear a lot of, I mean, also what it meant to be a rapper, you know, because a lot of rappers today it's very melodic. I mean, like the lines between R&B and rap have kind of like been erased a little bit, you know?
A lot.
And I, because I recognize that from back in the days that you do shows and they'd be mostly like, you know, the heads would be there, but it was like nobody was dancing because it wasn't that type of, you know, in the 90s, vibe. That's not what it was about, you know?
Whereas
today, you know, you can get more of a dance floor, you know, and keep it real, so to speak.
Yeah, true. And I mean, like you can probably understand that better than some, because you had a very melodic flow at times. You know, you were trying things with your flow from the early stuff that I've heard, you know, and stuff. And I can imagine back in those days, because I had the same problem. I'd always be trying to not necessarily do like a Bone Thugs, but I'd try and sometimes add some extra flows, and then guys be like, yo, man, just do it like DMX, you know, they just like wanted that straight. That was the realest thing at one point, you know.
I definitely caught slack for adding like melody to my rhymes, you know, back in the early 2000s. There were definitely some, you know, orthodox people in the scene who were not having it, you know, the hardliners, the fundamentalists. But I respect that, and I was always humble about that. But I was like, but I'm still gonna have to, you know, do it.
Do me.
I'm still gonna have to try it, you know. But tell me, Navio, you released your last your fifth solo album came out last year, Strength in Numbers. It's a dope album. I think from the moment when I saw the cover, it started telling the story, you know. Tell me, how was it to release an album in 2020? It's leading up to this very kind of acrimonious election that happened in the beginning of this year. Like, how was that experience?
It was crazy, man. It was crazy. I mean, you know, you had everything happening in the election. The person who's running against, you know, the president, you know, first of all, you look at the numbers and you're like, okay, when you see someone at like 5 million votes and you see this guy who used to be an artist and a troublemaker, and a ragamuffin and like a, you know, had that thug.
Because Bobby Wine was at some point one of Uganda's top artists, right?
Yeah, still is.
Singer, I understand it. He still is today. That's very dope to balance that out, being a top artist and at the same time nearly won the election.
Yeah, it's incredible that happened, you know. And I wouldn't say he was super close, but I mean, you know, they're used to winning, like, the next closest person will have, like, 1 million votes if, like, the person has 5 million. And now you had a situation where it's, like, you know, he's on like 3.5 million votes and the president's like 5.8. That's like, that's super close to even have half of what the president does, because he's very loved. He's a very loved president. You know, that's
Museveni,
there's no denying
is very
that.
Loved still.
Yeah,
still
Museveni is, yeah, he's still very loved. But
I imagine,
you know,
him being kind of the father of the nation in a way.
You know,
with his revolutionary credentials,
So Bobby... and also, yeah, of course, so Bobby comes in with the election. I have the most collaborations with him as an artist. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to duck where I can, stay safe. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the fact that you had collaborated with Bobby Wine so much could be a problem for you in the eyes of the authorities.
Yeah. Put me in on a list, you know, where they have to keep an eye on me. And you know, I got a lot of offers, you know, I won't say just from the leading party, but I did get a lot of offers to kind of join all the parties. You know, I think when they saw that kind of worked, the one thing that a lot of people miss is they'll have the following, but, you know, they didn't have the squeaky clean reputations. And so that's what they thought they could capitalize on with me. So, you know, almost I say a lot, I won't say which, but I say a lot of political parties try to get me on board as well to kind of.
And did you consider like involving yourself in politics at some point? Or
I mean, when you think about, sometimes you get lured in by that financial gain, but then you have to think about what's true to you. You know, what's going to keep you safe, your family safe. I don't need my kid going to school with, you know, two armed guards. You know what I mean? It's not like Sweden over here. Like, every guard, AK-47, fully loaded. Like,
okay.
I don't feel like I want that to be happening. And I already get so much attention from just being an artist as well. You know, anything can go wrong, you know, just on a night out. So, I didn't want to attract more of that in my life because I've been, you know,
how did you then balance that? Like, you're releasing, you know, that when you release your album during the, you know, run up to the election, that whatever you say can be held against you. But like, how did you balance that as far as like the lyrics and what the content of the album is?
Yeah, I mean, thank God for hip hop, you know, the metaphors. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to
the convoluted,
you know, and that is really, there are a lot of hip hop fans who will understand exactly what I'm saying, but for most of the population, it still goes over their heads, especially, you know, people who are running the joint. So I still feel like I was free to say whatever I needed to say, but I was aware that anything I can say can affect, you know, the family and my people and who I care about. You know, at the end of the day, also just the hip hop spirit, you want to say what you want to say sometimes, you know. So I got on and I'd be able to state my opinion. I think how you say it also matters, you know. You can state your opinion without being disrespectful. And then other times you have to be disrespectful, you know.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How did something like the killing of George Floyd, how did that land in would you say, in like in your mind, seen from Kampala, seen from, you yeah. know, from Uganda. How did that, yeah. would you say, affect your people?
I think for it was half and half. Half the people kind of were aware, or half of us believe that we have brothers that have been stolen and taken, so we don't expect them to be treated well anyway. And then the other half is kind of like, yo, this is an American with an American passport. Why is there a knee on the back of his neck? Mm-hmm. You know, because we always thought that sort of stuff is reserved for, you know, either it's a back in the day thing or, you know, I don't know. Like if, yeah, there was definitely those who thought that, yeah, that is how we see America because of what we hear from Trump and the rest of them. That's how we see that's how we think they should, that's how we think they are treated, you know? And then the other half of them, you know, are surprised. They're like, oh my goodness, you know, everyone who comes over here from the States, you know, all we see are the artists and, you know, you go to a Rick Ross concert or a R. Kelly or a Wyclef concert over here, you know, you see these guys bawling and having a blast and you're like, oh man, black people are free out there. You know, you don't really realize the extent of what they went through. And I think George Floyd brought that back into perspective for us in Africa. Like, yo, these guys are getting treated, you know, as badly as they ever were. You know, it has been like this. All that stuff that we thought was just overreaction from Tupac. And this is back in 95 when he used to talk about this stuff. You know, none of that has changed. So, yeah, it definitely, I think it lent us perspective. Yeah. We just want them to come thing, home.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I'm wondering if in essence it can, you know, affect young people today in a country like Uganda to think twice maybe about dreaming about migrating to the United States or to Britain.
Oh.
To really, I mean, to just realize that, you know, I think a lot of times growing up in Sweden, my dad lived for 10 years in Nigeria, so... Mm-hmm. We were well connected with you know, the African communities around in southern Sweden where I grew up. But I would still react to the fact that for my my classmates, whatever, you know, white Swedes, the images that they were shown of Africa were those of poverty, starvation, war, and suffering, you know. Never of, you know, I remember myself, the first time I went to sub-Saharan Africa, I landed in Durban in 2004, 2003, I think it was. 2002.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, I'd been taught about Africa since I was a child, you know, I knew a lot of kids whose roots were in different parts of the continent, it still was like, wow, you know. Even to me, it was kind of revelatory to see that, you know, people in suits, people with, you know, straight backs, heads high, people like really. And I noticed that South African cultures of one of great joy, happiness, dance, music, like really, you know,
better roads than Sweden.
you know, and none of that diet of. Oh, Africa's just poor and suffering and like a kind of orphan child. And at the same time, you know, speaking to my people in Africa during my travels there, saying how they grew up with seeing maybe Europe, for example, as a place where everybody's, where there's wealth and there's opportunity and you know, kind of like a paradise. And these skewed and incomplete ideas of each other between Europe and Africa.
Because
I see it, you know, and then people will, of course, over the course of many years, and my dad migrated to Europe from the United States, though, in search of a better life and more opportunity. And sure, that does exist. But here you also have, you know, you have people suffering, you have poverty, you have crime, you have a lot of the social illnesses that exist that are global, but
it's so hard to get a complete picture. I mean, you know, Africa, you can see that the resources are here,
all the
and sometimes some yeah and sometimes when you're in Europe as well, you know, when you start figuring out and you start asking questions about what is actually planted here, what national resources are there here, you know, there are a few countries I won't mention, but I did a little touring in Europe, and I was looking around, I'm like, what do you guys actually do here? Like, well, kind of just import, export, you know. It's like Africa has this abundance of resources that we don't capitalize on, and we don't add value to, you know. We literally just, you know, pluck it out the ground, sell it to Europe, and then it gets sold back to us, you know, at 20 times the price.
To clarify, you know, resources are in Africa, but the wealth it escapes a lot of it anyway.
So and you know, mentioning South Africa also, can you imagine that the same malls that you were walking into in 2002, you would not have been able to walk into 8 years earlier than that, you know. So that place also has its own imbalances, you know, in but it is a utopian, it is, you know, an amazing place to be at, and you can see what happens when resources in a country are used, you know, to kind of get ahead in world economies and stuff right now. And to think Congo has as many resources as that, you know, Botswana has as many resources as that, you know, there's Nigeria, so many other countries, oil rich, there's so many other places that have those resources, but no one's been able to really capitalize on that. And a lot of times they're not helped too, because when you go to a shop, for example, if you go to a street corner shop, you might be able to invest in that shop, but you might now not be able to afford the cheap goods that they've been selling to you at that price. You know what I mean? So it's kind of the same way with economies. It's like, why would I go into Congo and help them really set up their structure and get a hold of all their assets and all their natural resources? You know what I mean? Then they have control over me. They can sell it to me. And, you know, the same thing that happened in the Middle East, where oil prices just skyrocketed, you know, out the blue. It really showed that when you have control of your own resources, you kind of have, you know, the Western world by the gonads, by the balls.
From a hip hop perspective, it feels like the past 10 years, Africa, the continent of Africa, and, you know, maybe, well, but via both Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, South Africa, also Senegal, and many nations, is really claiming a place in global hip hop in a way that it hadn't previously.
It's a beautiful thing to watch, because there is a universal there are universal trends that happen, you know. And what I like about hip hop, especially from everywhere in the world, is people kind of get on it and add their own little vibe to it, you know. So, for example, you can imagine our perspective when we used to hear grime, for example, from the UK, you know, we'd be like, oh, okay, you know, that's there. But, you know, will it ever really get out? And then you have the Pop Smokes come out using the same beats and they blow it up. And that just becomes a worldwide trend. But that's from the UK. That's a UK sound, like, you know, no one can deny that. But yeah, it is interesting to see how people jump on those trends and then make it their own. And like, you know, these Ghana boys, what Ghana has done with drill and whatnot right now is just, for me, that's like the, you know, I'm like, you know, it's, yeah. It's unheard of.
So what are some of the artists you're checking now, like Ghana, Nigeria, like around around the continent of Africa that our listeners may not be up on? I mean, of course, including yourself, but
yeah. I mean, from here, Kenya, I gotta check out Calligraph.
Yeah,
Tay Green from Zambia. Of course, yeah, Sakodie, Ghana. Start there and work your way down there. But there are a lot of young boys. Sakodie is an OG. He came in with me. So, but yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, this is, you know, AKA, of course, Casper in South Africa. Yeah, and I'm just touching on like just the top.
Yeah, just the tippy tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, trust me, there are like artists who will kill all of the guys I just mentioned, including me, that are just starting out. So, yeah, it's, you literally just type African hip hop, man, in any platform that you're on right now. And, it's going to be an eye opener, you know? It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Also, I think the Niger sound using, as a making its own thing of kind of dancehall influence, also now has, you know, via the likes of, for example, Drake, influencing American artists. Because usually, you know, it was a one-way street. Like, America influences the rest of the world as far as hip-hop is considered. But it's like starting to open up. Have you been stateside to perform?
I have, actually. And yeah, the blend of stuff I had to do was insane because I was in a club. My last show, we did a place in Atlanta, so which is heavy on like that down south vibe. But then it's an African owned club, and I'm coming through from UG. You know, it was like there was levels to that performance. You know, and people at the end were just like, we had managed to cater for everyone. You know, by the time an hour was done, you know. I thank God that I came into the industry with versatility because, you know, jump on stage, knock out my Burner Boy collaboration, you know, and then there's,
okay, you
know, there's
got
some
a Burner
old,
collabo.
Yeah. Then there's That's some old dope. Heads That's in the dope. Place. So we, I do my Keith Sweat collab, you know, then switch it over.
You got something
do a couple
for everybody.
Of,
yeah.
Yeah. Underground battle. Yeah. And then, you know, it was the craziest, most schizophrenic show I ever did, but it made sense, you know, because there were so many cultures in there and everyone was taken care of. So thank God for versatility, man. It's
a vibe. Speaking of, do you think of, like, you know, when talking with your wife, you're thinking about your family, your future. Do you imagine yourself staying in Uganda and building still in your home country? Or is there any kind of horizon of we might have to move to UK or US or
I can't go. My father's the son of a chief. Like they built the city around my village, you know, like last 600 years we've been here, you know. And before that, so for me it's like culturally I can't really move. We still have a king, you know. You gotta pay taxes to the institution and pay taxes to the king. That's how deep it is for us.
So this is the king of Buganda.
Yes, the Kabaka. Yeah, my point was there. I definitely can't leave. And you think about, you know, some of the ways that I got ahead in the industry, that constant performing. I've been performing since I was 15, 16 years old until COVID hit. So I've been doing the endorsements. I've been, you know, pushing, I've been saving, I've been, and at the end of the day, I was like, do I keep trying to perform on a level? You know, I've already been in top five in Africa, you know, at one point in my career. Do I keep trying to push that right now during COVID, or do I try and settle my roots, you know, really like build my crib? I mean, I own a couple of places, but like really build that lakefront dream house of mine. Do I get that out the way? You know, I'm an old man now, you know what I mean? So
not yet, brother, because if you're old, just means I'm older, man.
Well, you know what I mean? But you got Swedish facials, man. I don't know. I'm out here.
I hear you, man.
I'm not older than you. Am I not older than you?
Yeah, I'm 75. I'm born in 75.
Okay. Yeah, you got me. A couple years. I got a couple on you.
But it's also, you know, and it's also all about how much we've done in our lives. But it is interesting to discover also what aging within hip hop culture is like and how that plays out, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Actually, just on the other point, it's like the responsibilities you have. Do I use my resources to risk and keep trying to put myself on that level as far as the African act? Or do I solidify my roots at home? You know, so that is always that's always key for me. That's actually the only question I was asking, you know, when the pandemic hit, when I was like, yeah, I can keep trying to chase these DaVitos and WizKids for another generation. But I've kind of been in the top artists for like, you know, years, you know. So I thought it was time to step back. But yeah, aging in hip hop is crazy. Luckily for me, I'm always open to new vibes. If I see a new act on stage, you know, doing something I've never heard before. Like I had mentioned when you asked me about some of my inspirations, you know, that album from the Fushnikens. I don't know if you know them well.
Of course. Yeah, man.
So, you know, hearing groups like that, I'm like, these guys are completely going against the grain and doing something, you know, that has never been heard of. It's insane. You know, you know, like what happens when an MC snaps, that's the level that they're always on, you know. So for me, when I hear a new flow and I see something, it never really surprises me. I just put myself in their mind frame because I was a new act once, you know what I mean? So I think about what they've done in their flow that I can add and what, you know, they're not doing that I can. You know, for me, it's always a give and take with new cultures and new artists and new acts coming. Whereas you have a lot of people from our generation who are always like, man, you know, stick with the boom bap. And, you know, I would never touch a beat like that. Like, I would never say that I would never touch a beat like that.
No.
You know, I mean,
that's when we truly grow old, is when we stop developing and progressing and growing.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the challenge, you know, definitely. But yeah, you got to make mature decisions, man. End of the day, man. You know?
It's a hell of a road to navigate, too, because I feel myself wanting to, like, you know, on my latest album, wanting to speak directly to some of the younger. I mean, we're seeing a kind of a trend of a lot of the kind of talking about, but also living the life of like, you know, where guns and another level of violence is a lot more talked about, romanticized, glorified, but also lethal, you know, in a way that when I was, you know, coming up in the 90s, you know, of course things could pop off, but it was very rarely including that level of violence, you know. So I found myself writing the lyrics wanting to speak to them, you know, more in the kind of uncle OG, in the fashion of how an uncle OG would speak. But at the same time, I know that nothing will be less attractive to them than hearing. They don't want to hear some uncle, man. They're 18, 19 years old. They want to do their thing. They want to show that they can also, you know what I mean?
Yeah, my first mixtape, it actually came after the Clear Cut albums. It was called Revolutionary Mindset. And it was all just upliftment type of vibe. And that's what I wanted to do. But even in within my own team and people around me, it's like, listen, nobody is going to give it two hoots about what you want to do, you know? So I literally tried to even involve, I was like, let me take it higher and even try and involve, like, you know, charities and these kind of things and, you know, youth upliftment. And also they weren't really interested. They just wanted me to show up, quick photo op, you know, do like a photo opportunity and that's it. And I was like, yo, why don't we try to build, you know, a certain level of like a conscious movement of where people are, you know, more positive and whatnot. So, and then when this COVID hit and I got my two kids, I kind of feel like I have to just come back and do what's popping right now. You know, do what's popping right now, kind of put my foot down and say I'm in the door still. And then from there, you know, I can now see where I can build. And I mean, in Sweden, actually, I was really surprised when I was there because I was there for like 3 months when my son was being born. And
when are we talking? This pre-pandemic, I guess.
This is end of 2017. And then when my other son was being born. I was really low. I was super low key.
Of course.
But yeah, then I was there in 2018, December into 2019. So through the winter, first of all, I gotta make that known to everybody.
That must be because, you know, Kampala and Stockholm or anywhere in Sweden, quite different when it comes to, you know.
Quite different. I wouldn't quite put it like that.
If it weren't for the collective forgetfulness, where kind of in our minds, we kind of forget how ghastly these winters are, none of us would be here, man. So there's some kind of trick of the mind that enables that. So how was the winter in Sweden for you, Navio? Yeah.
Man, it was painful, man. It was painful. I was like, I literally just want to hold my child. Just
that's
to get
why people hibernate
myself.
Literally, you know, during winter months here.
Yeah. It's like he really loves his child is inside his shirt. I'm like, it ain't for him. It's for me. It's for me, dog. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know if he gonna make it, but I am. No, but it was a beautiful thing though, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never seen anything like that. You know, sweeping snow off the roads, and it's like 30 feet high. Mm-hmm. You know, like that much ice has fallen during the night. Like that kind of stuff. It sounds crazy, but to me, it's like otherworldly. I've never been in winter like that. I've been in the UK during winter. It's just like a bit mossy and there's some you know, rain. The street is slippery. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, you know. But this was like next level coldness, man. But it was a dope experience and everything. But even then, I'm sorry, to come back to the point, I started hearing about, you know, like gun violence and stuff in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was like, that's really weird because I'm looking around and I'm like, it's not too bad. These winters are crazy. But I feel like once an idea like that starts, you know, from what I witnessed, it's like once that gangsterism thing starts in a certain area and you feel like you're entitled to do A, B, C, D to another person and you fall in love with American culture and you kind of, you know, kind of personify that somewhere else, you know, because I did see a lot of more gangster stuff than I should have, you know, because of some of the people that were around us. And I was really surprised that it's getting to that level in Sweden. And also my sister-in-law is kind of like working with, I can't pronounce anything in Swedish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she kind of works in those youth homes and with, you know, youth who are in trouble and stuff like that. So, you know, she comes back with stories and I'm just like, it's just unbelievable, you know, sometimes the level.
But, you have the two energies working in tandem. One of them, and of course, the primary one is the inequalities that do exist here. You know, the Western style inequalities of mainly of income, but also inequalities of education and healthcare and really that actually being what we have grown up with here, even though, of course, yes, you have more or less, I mean, or everybody has running water and hot water. And I mean, there's a certain standard that everybody enjoys. But even within that, there's grave inequality and, of course, systemic racism. Yeah. And then at the same time, you have this very magnetic and even more omnipotent hip-hop culture than it was when we got into it, you know. I mean, when I started, really dedicating and passionately becoming a part of hip hop culture in 1989, it was still very, you know, in the small town in the south of Sweden where I was from, there were like 10 people in town that were into hip hop, you know. And then, of course, we see today it's by far the most dominant kind of pop cultural force globally, you know. And but in that, inside of that, you have a more kind of violent streak, you know. For example, a group like the Foo Schnickens, who really embody that kind of playfulness, almost a playfulness, a kind of a joy-based, you know, way of just like energy and showing like your just your skills of being a rapper and kind of moving the crowd or impressing the crowd with your bars and your flow to today where you know trap and drill is it's cold and quite dark you know and a lot of it you know kids today are listening to the Pop Smokes of you know may he rest in power but you know you kind of where you live by the gun in a sense that always has been around in hip hop, but is even more dominant today, I think. So I think you have those two things pulling
at that. Because it was very easy to see, you know, who you can and who you can't mess with. But nowadays, you know, someone come up to you in pink pants and pink hair and the whole
pink
and
tight
rob
pants.
You properly. Like, you know, they'll be, in fact, they wouldn't want to rob you. They just want to, you know, so I hope that changes. It's weird. And in such a beautiful place, you go from Kraftwerk to seeing that. You know what I mean? Straight, you put down your fork and knife at Kraftwerk singing
you
songs.
You had your crayfish.
You go to the club and then suddenly it's like a whole different world. It's weird. But I hope that can be sorted.
Well, you know, I hope that, or I know that, you know, I hope we can get you back up to Sweden next time. And
absolutely.
Then we definitely have to link up, Navio.
Yes. You owe me a trek.
And I also, even more, I hope that, hell yeah, anytime, brother. Anytime, seriously. And well, let's just make that happen.
Yes, know? Yes.
Let's just make that happen.
Please.
And even more so, even before you come up here, I want to come to Kampala, man.
Ooh,
I need to come
you.
To Kampala.
I
know,
dare,
like,
yo.
We were just talking about these winters. Oh, I'm, you know.
Bro, it's kind of crazy, man. We had one artist from there that I met when I was out there. And he was supposed to come here for, 2 weeks and he ended up spending 3 months. So watch out. Mm. Be careful. Uganda will get you.
Oh, yeah.
The food is amazing. Like...
Yeah, I want to get one of those.
The
Rolexes,
bananas are sweet.
You know?
Yo, Rolex, man. See, you do too much damn research, Timbuktu. And Rolexes, you know what a Rolex is?
Yes, man. I've never had one, but I know what it is.
Chapati, which is kind of like a more delicious roti made with milk. Mm. And then they put like kind of an omelet, an egg in there. Mm-hmm. And then you can have like the tomatoes, fresh Ugandan juicy tomatoes in there with the cabbage. They roll that joint up and you got yourself a Rolex. They call it a Rolex, but it's really, the word comes from roll eggs. So they just call it a Rolex.
Roll eggs.
So,
Yeah.
Street food.
I thought it had something to do with the watch from Switzerland. But I like the Rolex.
Because everybody's always
more.
Like, it's Rolex time, maybe. Because every time is Rolex time. Yeah, man.
So Navio, all of our dear listeners, you can check Navio on your local streaming platform. That shit is worldwide. And your latest album, Strength in Numbers, I highly recommend that y'all blast that now and get a taste of what Ugandan hip hop feels like. Where can we find you? Where can the listeners find you on like Instagram and your handles?
Instagram, Twitter.
what's your handle on Instagram?
Snapchat is all of those are at Navio Music. So Navio Music. NAVIO. Facebook is just Navio. Man, please, you guys look me up.
Thank you for adding to global hip hop culture with your art and diligence for all these decades, man. You know, it's a beautiful thing, brother.
It's a privilege. It's a privilege.
Thanks for coming on, Navio.
I'm teaching you so you know when you get here. Vera Bulunji Sebo, Wasebo Niwanyago Weva Dara Sula Bulunji. It's your boy Navio. Ooh-ah-da, hey.
Thank you so much, brother.
Peace.
Stay safe now. And keep that heat on Kampala.
Oh, we must. We must.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.